This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Welcome back into the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe while he is out. I'm now joined by CBS Sports' David Cobb. You can find him on Twitter at David W. Cobb. David, how was your holiday break, my friend?
Oh, it was fantastic. I told George I, you know, came down with a little holiday sickness here that has manifested itself today. But you know what? That's life with an infant or slash toddler. So you know we just got to learn how to power through, man. You know, just got to power through.
Well, I appreciate you playing hurt with us today on the Gabe Kuhn Show. I do want to ask, what was your favorite gift that you gave or gift that you received for Christmas?
Oh well, so we did get sort of for the fam, aka for me and Sarah, a Switch 2, Nintendo Ooh. Switch 2. So, yeah, catch me playing Mario Kart World. It's pretty good gift. Honestly, like, you know, when I was 16, if you had told me that I would still be enjoying video games as Christmas gifts in my 30s, I'd be like, no, you're crazy. But here we are, and pretty jacked about that. So, honestly, that checks both boxes because it was a gift that I gave, but it was also a gift that I received. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, those are honestly, you get to be this age, those are the best. Like, you know what you want more than anybody else does. So, we booked a trip. We're going to, later this year, we're going to go to Hawaii. So,
very nice.
That's a big one.
That's excellent. Excellent. Yes, it's the Switch 2. Very fun. I went down to Pearl, Mississippi to visit my girlfriend's family over the weekend, and I established dominance over the family in Mario Party. I was absolutely ruthless with the star stealing. You have to do what you have to do to win. Was it a middle schooler and an elementary schooler that I was beating? Yes. Did I still win? Yes.
Well, but here's the thing: you got to be careful, right? Because like you're the outsider, like you're the boyfriend.
Oh,
like,
no.
You know,
I'm
Mario
good.
Mario Party can be pretty cutthroat.
It can be. It can. And to be fair, the middle schooler, he took the shot first. He started stealing stars. Because it was the jamboree. So I as an N64, you know, I was born in 1994. Like the N64, that Mario Party is the one I'm used to. I didn't know the landscape of this new Mario Party. And apparently there's some cloud thing where you can steal stars from people. And he was taking shots early. And then we played Overcooked, which is just chaos.
Oh, that's fun, yeah.
And my relationship survived it. So that's good news. That's good news. But
well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, yeah, I'm glad you had a good time.
That's not only did my relationship survive, but Michigan football seemingly is going to survive the Sherrone Moore fallout controversy because they have a new head coach, and his name is Kyle Whittingham. George and I just discussed it. Both of us said that we like the hire because it's going to bring to them, at the very least, stability and someone who's going to focus on football. It's going to be the number one priority for Kyle Whittingham is going to be trying to win football games for Michigan. He said in his introductory presser that he understands that at Michigan, with the resources that he has, another thing that he has to focus on is roster retention. David, when you saw the hire, did you give it a yay or a nay?
Yeah, I mean, I do give him a thumbs up. Initially, though, my thought was if you're going to go with the old dude who probably isn't your long-term solution, just promote Biff Poggi, roll with him for 1 year, and then have your pick of the litter next year. Because the reality is Michigan got here late to this coaching carousel.
Right.
Had they gotten to the coaching carousel early, they would have been in front of the line. You know, they could have gone after whoever they wanted to. And you could still do that again next year if you just went with a long-term interim with Biff. Now, having said that, like, I do think there's a chance Kyle Whittingham ends up being like one of these situations where they just fall backwards into somebody who could be really good for them because he is about as steady of a coach as you can find. And at this point in time, Michigan just needs like a leader with solid moral footing. and Kyle Whittingham brings that. I mean, he's about as squeaky clean of a college football coach as you're going to find. And given everything that Michigan went through with Jim Harbaugh and then Sharon Moore, like they had to turn the page. And honestly, like promoting Biff Pogge wouldn't have done that because he was a part of the Harbaugh era. And so they needed to make a clean break, and they did. Now, I would have still, again, I would have been okay if you, all right, let's promote Biff, do it for 1 year, and then be front of the line next year. All right, like they don't want to do that. I think the Whittingham thing makes sense. Given what they had available to them, I don't think they could have done much better, you know, in the circumstances. So the awkward part, though, is that, like, I mean, this is a guy who is in the twilight of his career, like, and he's never done it anywhere other than Utah. So, like, is he going to have the institutional alignment? Oh, yeah, and by the way, Connor, he's not going to have, like, his trusted confidant, his defensive coordinator, Morgan Scalley, sure, who's now been promoted at Utah. So, like, they've been tied at the hip for over a decade now. So, like, the last thing on it, too, is, like, the awkwardness of Utah thinking that Kyle Whittingham was going to retire. Well, now Kyle Whittingham is going to have a war chest at Michigan that he's going to use to recruit Utah's players, and he's already recruiting Utah staff. Like, so Utah mismanaged it as well. But long term, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, what is it, where is Michigan better off in 5 years for having hired Kyle Whittingham here? I don't know. I can't say that for certain, but I do think they'll be better off in 2026. And then, you know, it'll be up to whoever's in charge there, which is a huge question mark right now. It'll be up to that person to figure it out from there. Short term, though, probably a good move.
Yeah, I think George and I discussed the Biff Pogge thing, and I do think he's someone that you want to keep on campus because I think that he seems to care about Michigan football, and he wants to bring some stability to it. However, if you hire Biff Pogge, are you going to be able to keep the young talent on campus that you already have? I think that you have a better chance of doing that with someone like Kyle Whittingham, who has proven that he can win football games. And now that he has a war chest, it is interesting. But it is true. It is an awkward situation because when he was stepping away from Utah, he never said the word retire. He said, I'm retiring from Utah. But it didn't seem like he was retiring overall from college football. I do want to ask you, do you think that the business dealings of Utah recently is why he stepped away? Do you think he looked at it and just said, this isn't the Utah that I'm used to? It's going to change a lot moving forward. I just don't want to be a part of it. And that's why he decided to step away?
Well, so I wonder if he wasn't pushed out to a certain extent.
Oh.
If Morgan Scalley didn't start to say, hey, guys, look, I've been the coach in waiting here for how long now? You know, when's this guy going to hang it up? I ain't getting any younger. Oh, maybe Morgan Scalley's agent is talking to Utah's administration and saying, hey, look, you know, our guy could be in the running for this, that, or the other, which I never would have bought that. I don't think any quality job other than Utah was going to be looking at Morgan Scalley, but agents have a way of getting what they want. And then you mentioned like the private equity stuff, right? Like you invite that in and then all and you give power to those forces and, you know what? Like those folks might say, oh, we want a more exciting offense than what Kyle Whittingham runs, you know? And he might, I think it's probably both and, Connor. I think it's probably Kyle Whittingham getting a little bit fed up with the direction of Utah and some of the seedier waters that they're going to be swimming in there with the private equity stuff. And then at the same time, it's like, is he really being appreciated by his administration for all the success that he's had there? Another 10-win season right there on the outside looking at the college football playoff. And then he realizes, hey, look, you know, Michigan might come up and maybe there's a chance I can weasel my way in there. So I think he's the winner here. Kyle Whittingham in this situation is the winner. Michigan, there's no way you can really spin them into a winner with everything they've gone through here. They're still having this investigation going on into their athletic department by an external review. And then you got Utah, which is kind of mishandled this situation here and is turning the keys over to a certain extent to private equity. So, the only person or entity really coming out on top of this whole thing is Kyle Whittingham. And honestly, like I'm okay with that. Cause like, he's one of the good guys.
Yeah. He seems to be one of the good guys. George and I were joking that he probably thinks OnlyFans is a ticketing app. Like he probably doesn't even understand what that is. And we looked up his Instagram just because we were curious and it's the most college football PR Instagram you've ever seen. So they seemingly went out there and said, we have to find the exact opposite of Moore. And I think that they were able to do that in Kyle Whittingham. Now, you did bring up that there may have been some younger options that they could have gone after instead of just going with a 66-year-old who seems to be in the twilight of his career, who has been in college football for, 31 years and a head coach for 20-plus years. So in terms of comparison to someone like Kenny Dillingham, do you if you had the choice, Dillingham or Whittingham, which one are you going with?
Oh, I would go with Kenny Dillingham, absolutely. And not because I don't think Kyle Whittingham's a good coach, but because I think you could build a national title-winning program around a guy like Kenny Dillingham, who has taken over a dumpster fire before.
Right.
When he went into Arizona State, that place was in turmoil. The Herm Edwards tenure had ended in absolute disaster. He had a major, major mess to clean up there, and he did it. He got them to the college football playoff in his second season. So, to me, that would have been a fantastic hire. But what we saw in this cycle is how hard it was to pry coaches away from their alma mater. You look at Brent Key, Georgia Tech, stayed. Clark Lee at Vanderbilt, stayed. You look at Kenny Dillingham, Arizona State, that's his alma mater. He stayed. So Jeff Brohm, Louisville, he stayed. There's a couple more that I'm blanking on off the top of my head. These guys, they stayed. They stayed at their schools. Kalani Sitake, wasn't he a BYU alum, right? So, so many of these guys who you would have thought could have gotten other jobs or absolutely could have, they stayed because they're at the place that they love. And I think that's interesting. I think that shows you in this era, where if you have the proper NIL support, you don't necessarily have to leave for the, quote, better job anymore, because sometimes – the good thing that you got going is better than, going to a chaotic or tumultuous situation just because it's a, quote, more prestigious position or whatever. I think in this era, if you're at your alma mater or you're at a what maybe didn't used to be looked at as a good job and they're investing in you, investing in your staff, investing in your roster, you're better off just staying where you are.
Yeah. I think I agree with you. If I had the choice between the two, I think I'm taking Dillingham. But I think I understand why Michigan went with the proven commodity, especially when you're coming out of so much turmoil. Because it's not just Moore that they've been having. It's all the Harbaugh fallout through Moore. And your team miraculously went 9-3 last season, which is a good record despite everything that we learned that was going on. But now that you have Whittingham in the building, you can try to retain that roster and just move forward while focusing on football. And with Dillingham, it would have been a young coach that would have to prove himself in a new conference with a different style of play that he's never had to really deal with before. He would have a lot of resources. And at least with Whittingham, he's dealt with having some sort of resources before. And I understand that if you did Pogge for a year and then went with Dillingham, that could work out. But I think that you had to bring stability immediately to Michigan. And then another name that some people mentioned was Kalen DeBoer, but I don't know how real that could have actually been because you've got the transfer portal January 2nd and you have to retain this roster as much as you possibly can. And you just don't know if you're going to be able to get DeBoer in that building. It depends on how the game goes. And so that's why I think that Whittingham ultimately with all the circumstances was about as good of a hire as you could have made.
Yeah. Well, the DeBoer thing might've gotten a lot more real if they had not rallied from a 17-point deficit beat Oklahoma. That very realistically could have been a possibility for Michigan if Alabama had been eliminated. But for all the reasons you mentioned with the portal opening, you weren't going to see DeBoer leave in time for Michigan to feel good about it, right? So honestly, had Alabama lost, I think that would have been a smart move for DeBoer if Michigan had wanted him. Because you would have been 0-2 really at that point and meeting expectations at Alabama. And that's not any way to go into year three, right? So that could have made some sense. But I think that in the short term, again, Whittingham's style of play, I think actually works pretty well with Michigan. Utah is never a spread you out, up-tempo. I mean, they really lean into the sort of frozen tundra cloud of dust, sort of run oriented, defense heavy, right? That was the recipe for Jim Harbaugh's title winning team, was just sort of be more physical than you. And that's always been his MO at Utah. So you know, it's just, I think the ultimate jury or the ultimate verdict on if Michigan did this right will be rendered when they make the next hire. Like, if they're able to clean everything up, make this job unbelievably attractive to the best of the best candidate after Whittingham's time is done, then, like, then they will have made it the right decision. And so that's kind of where it's at now. It's like, does the administration at Michigan have the wherewithal to make Whittingham the right decision? Do they have the organization to invest in his roster the way that they need to? I think so. But then can they get everything sort of cleaned up and get the stench of the Jim Harbaugh, Sharon Moore era in the past and get some more stable leadership in there that you know, can kind of guide the ship into the future? And if they can do that, then yeah, they can make this the right hire.
What do you think the expectation for Whittingham next year at Michigan is going to be? Is it going to be make it to the college football playoff, be at the top of your conference, or is it going to simply be try to win 9 or 10 games while maintaining program stability and retaining most of the talent and bringing in talent?
No, I think it's the second thing. I think a college football playoff berth would be exceeding expectations for Kyle Whittingham in his first year at Michigan. Now, you know, for example, like I'm fascinated to see how their quarterback situation is going to play out,
right?
Because Kyle Whittingham said his first player meeting was with Bryce Underwood. Well, if I'm Bryce Underwood, I'm looking at the style of play that Kyle Whittingham's bringing over, and I'm looking at the freshman season I had, and I might be thinking to myself, I'm ready to go somewhere where they're going to let me loose. Because, I mean, they kept him on a pretty short leash this year. I mean, he threw for 2,200 yards. I think he ended up with 10 or 11 touchdown passes. They didn't run him a whole lot. Like, we saw a very, very vanilla version of what Bryce Underwood can be. And if I'm that guy and I'm 2 years away from trying to be 1-1 in the 2028 NFL draft, like I need to be showcased. Like I need to go somewhere that can illustrate to everybody why I was the number one overall prospect in the class of 2025. And we didn't see that with him this year. And so, like, to me, that's a huge, huge part of the equation for Michigan, for Kyle Whittingham, is what happens at quarterback. So for example, like they're probably, like, it sounds like they're bringing Jason Beck, the offensive coordinator, with them to Michigan. That might even be official at this point. I know it's been reported. Whether it's official or not, like, that's kind of what they're going to do, is what they did at Utah this year. And I still don't think that's exactly like what a quarterback like Bryce Underwood needs. Devin Dampier is run heavy. They don't throw downfield a whole lot, you know? And so, like, that's going to be a huge determining factor in what Michigan's ceiling is. Because if they're able to retain Bryce Underwood, get the most out of him, and tailor their system to his strengths, then, like, yeah, I believe a team led by a quarterback with that amount of talent could compete for the Big Ten title. But if Utah, or if Kyle Whittingham trying to kind of plays it safe and reverts back to what brought him success at Utah, you know, I don't think that's necessarily going to bring them the ultimate level of success in the Big Ten and guarantee them a playoff berth. Like, I think you're looking at 9 or 10 wins max if they keep doing the same things they did before and expect them to have different results at Michigan.
The other big news in college athletics over the Christmas break was the signing of James Nagy by Baylor. And I think that it is fair to say this signals a step in the wrong direction for college basketball. How worrisome is a move like this by Baylor? And do you expect the NCAA to try to put guardrails around this? Because it just feels absolutely insane that you have someone who was drafted 31st overall in the 2023 NBA draft. And I know he never played an NBA game, but, you know, he played enough and he has enough experience where coming back to college just feels like it should not be possible for a guy like him.
I don't know, man. Like, I get it. Like, this is a first. This is a precedent that's being set here with a guy that was drafted, but he never played in the NBA. Like, honestly, it doesn't feel all that different to me than a lot of these other guys playing in Europe coming over. I mean, he's been playing in Europe. He's been playing overseas. And college basketball right now is littered with guys who've been playing professionally overseas. I don't view it as all that much different than that. And, like, I'll tell you what, man. Well, like,
but he entered the NBA draft. That's a huge difference. Those guys weren't former NBA draft guys that then came to college basketball after they were drafted into an organization.
Well, we see it all the time in college baseball. Guys get drafted in college baseball. And
this isn't college baseball. That's
end up
different.
Playing in college. So, okay. Well, here's what sort of makes me, like, it's just kind of funny to me. You got all these coaches out here right now. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe Baylor and Scott Drew are
they're
doing this.
Do it.
This is just. Well, exactly. They're just mad that he thought of it first. Like, he went out and got this guy that they didn't even realize was available, that they didn't realize that had eligibility. Now, they're in 5 years, everybody's going to look at Scott Drew as a pioneer, the pioneer of the draft and stash in college basketball. That's what this is going to bring about is guys, you're going to get a lot of second-round picks who NBA teams say, all right, hey, man, we got you all set up. You're going to go play at Duke. We're never going to take you away from Duke during the middle of the season there. We got it all worked out with John Shire or whatever. I'm just, you know, speculating here. But, like, we got it all worked out. And once their NCAA tournament is over, you know, if we need an extra body for our playoff run, like, you know, we're gonna call you up. Like, I think that's where this is headed. Because if you're really being honest, like, there are a lot of professional basketball players in college basketball right now. We just aren't familiar with the Adriatic League the way we are with the NBA. We're not familiar with the Italian Liga Series A, you know, like we are with the G League or whatever. And so to me, it's just bringing to America what's been happening for, you know, the last two or three years with all this overseas talent. So, I mean, I get it. Like, the guy was drafted, but he never played an NBA game. And I think, you know, if you're a coach, you're Scott Drew. Your job is to figure out how to win games for your team and your school. And if the other coaches want to point their fingers and you know, say how nasty this is, like, you know, let them. They're going to be doing the exact same thing over the coming years. So I don't love it, man. I don't love it. But I just think it's ridiculous that Scott Drew has kind of become the scorn of college basketball for this. I think he's smart. I think he, you, in this day and time, you got to creatively look behind every rock for talent and for players. And he's just one step ahead of the field here.
Sure. I mean, I can agree with that. I don't think that Scott Drew is going to be the only one that does this, and he's being villainized by other head coaches who are absolutely going to try to explore avenues to be able to do this exact same thing. That being said, I don't think that just because everybody wants to do it means it is something that needs to be allowed. Because this is a guy, he was drafted, he played, and he didn't technically play in NBA, he played in the NBA Summer League, he didn't play in a regular season game, but he played in Summer League. He was traded in the Karl Anthony Towns trade, so he was included in an NBA trade. I just think at some point, your eligibility needs to disappear. That if you are drafted by an NBA team, you should not then be able to come back to college basketball 2 years later when you've been used in a trade, you've played summer league, you have all this pro experience. That feels like a slippery slope to me. And again, it is something that he is able to exploit right now, and I'm not going to blame him for doing it, but it feels like something that we shouldn't be okay with becoming a normal thing in college basketball. This isn't what college basketball is.
I don't disagree with you really at all, but the thing is, to me, is like the slippery slope. This isn't the beginning of the slippery slope. This is just the next frontier in it. Like,
that's fair.
Like, you know, I mean, and so who's going to put guardrails around it? That's the question. The NCAA cannot enforce its rules, and so therefore they need Congress to intervene. Is this James Naji situation going to be the impetus to finally get Congress to act? I doubt it. I mean, there have been so many ring the alarm, you know, moments over the last 5 years, and they have failed at every turn to produce something that's going to fix it. So I think what it's got to be is collective bargaining and some rules put in place by a players' union in agreement with the athletic directors of these institutions, I guess, to mandate. All right, here are the rules. You can declare for the NBA draft. If you withdraw by this deadline, you're still eligible to play in college basketball. If you don't, you're in violation of the collective bargaining agreement, and you will no longer be eligible to play college basketball. And if you're represented or a part of the players' union, right, then you agree to that. Like, then you're held to those standards. That's how every professional sport works. And that's what college basketball is now. It's a professional sport. It's just not regulated like one. And so until we get to collective bargaining, you're just going to continue to see stuff like this. So the next evolution of all this is going to come in about 4 months, when after this college basketball season, guys start declaring for the NBA draft. And then what's going to happen is at least one of them is going to stay in the draft, not like where they were picked. Say that they get picked 54th when they thought they might go 27th. They get picked 54th, and they say, all right, well, I'm going to come back to college. All right, well, who's going to tell them no? I mean, right, because if James Nagy did it, he got drafted and never played in an NBA game and decided to come play college basketball. Well, you know, why couldn't another player do that who didn't like where they got drafted? You know, so that's going to be the next evolution in this. So just brace yourself for it. Because I can almost assure you it's going to happen in this cycle.
I swear, every month that goes by, college sports that we grew up with is just seemingly gone. I just think it's, and again, I don't really blame Scott Drew or Baylor for doing this. They found a loophole and was like, we can add someone who was drafted, that was one draft pick away from a guaranteed NBA contract. We have a photo of him, I think, defending Wembanyama in the summer league game, is now on your roster. He's going to help them win basketball games, especially with the injury to their center. Like, I understand why they did it. I don't blame them for doing it. I also fully agree with you. The same coaches who are, you know, in the quotes or being quoted right now saying, like, this S is crazy, and Dan Hurley and Tom Izzo being like, the Tom Izzo thing's weird. He's like, I have to call Scott Drew and see what's going on here. It's like, brother, you're calling him to ask him how he did it. We all know what's going on here. We know exactly what you're doing. All of them are going to attempt to do this in the future. They will. It's just because that may be true, I just wish, like you said, we could prevent it, because it just feels odd that you can be drafted by an NBA team, be a part of a trade, be a 31st pick, play in summer league not once but twice, and we can be honest about it, his NBA, his professional career flamed out. So he said, I guess I'm going back to college and I can make money now. And it's just, like you said, it's not the slippery slope, but man, it feels like you got a sled now on that slope and you're flying down. It's that Clark Griswold, whatever he put on his sled. You're just flying down it. Sparks are flying behind you. I just don't like what this means for the future.
Well, no, and that's totally fair. Connor, I'm shocked Penny Hardaway wasn't the first to this well of talent. I am shocked, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's not far behind, because you think about the creative avenues he's pursued.
Yeah.
Getting a guy like, oh gosh, was it Kaluma who enrolled mid-year? You know, there's no end to the creativity that Penny will use to get guys. I am surprised he didn't come up with this first. And I would fully endorse him going down this path, you know, if it's something that he wants to do, because the money you can make in college ball now, it really is, outside of the NBA, like it's about as good as you can make anywhere in the world. And now the very top level of European ball, you know, it's comparable, right? But outside of that, like it's the best money that's out there. And so, and there are still, like, I don't think we've seen anyone, you know, like, how far are we from a guy who's actually appeared in an NBA game getting eligibility? Like, okay, that's where I'll draw the line. But we might not be far. I don't know if you saw the report. It's kind of been walked back a little bit. But On3 had that Trenton Flowers was right of interest to college programs, and he has appeared in an NBA game. Now they've sort of walked some of that reporting back today. But that's one to monitor. Like, if we get to that point, okay, all right. Now I'm done, right? You know, but this one doesn't bother me as much, because the guy never played in the NBA. It feels just to me like a draft and stash sort of situation, like we've seen over the years in professional basketball. It's a lawless land out there, man. And until we get collective bargaining, forget about Congress,
right,
forget about the NCAA. Until we get collective bargaining, it will never stop. Collective bargaining is the only way out for college sports. And until we get there, we're just going to see more of this tomfoolery.
I suppose I just never thought a college basketball team would be doing a draft and stash. It just feels so backwards. But to your point, and I got to be hand up here, if Penny had done this and you're bringing an experienced seven-footer to Memphis, I'd be super happy. I would be like, this is exact, especially this Memphis basketball team. Boy, do they need big men who are serviceable out there. So,
why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again, but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
I would have been thrilled. It feels gross, but at the same time, like you said, it's not Baylor or Scott Drew's fault for exploiting a loophole right now, because the NCAA has zero bite and no authority to really govern their own leagues. It's just gone. So it's this free-for-all. It's this wild, wild west, and Baylor's just trying to capitalize on it. Last thing for you before I let you go. USC's Lincoln Riley has gone after Notre Dame now for ending the rivalry series. We had reports that it was USC's doing. Now Lincoln Riley is saying, no, 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 it's actually Notre Dame. Is this a everyone sucks situation, or does Riley have a point with Notre Dame?
No, it's an everyone sucks situation. Because if you're Notre Dame, you don't need to be ridding quality opponents from your schedule.
Right.
We saw how heavily they were penalized in this college football playoff selection process, because they really didn't play anyone all that great during their 10-game winning streak to end the season. USC was their best win. If I'm Notre Dame, I don't want my best opponent leaving my schedule, or one of my best three. Like, they need strength of schedule right now. That's a fight for them. So I do think this is USC kind of looking to duck a late season, tough, challenging non-conference game now that they're in a much tougher Big Ten than the Pac-12 was. In a Big Ten that requires a lot of cross-country travel. It used to be, if you had to go to Notre Dame every other year, that was probably one of two, maybe, games that required you to travel multiple time zones when you're in the Pac-12. Well, now they're traveling like, you know, five times a year, multiple time zones because of the league that they're in. And if you have Notre Dame off the schedule, then you reduce some of that travel burden, and the timing of the game, I think, was a huge issue for USC, because they're that meat grinder of the Big Ten, and they just didn't want to fool with having to play Notre Dame. So I mean, he can try to blame shift all he wants, and I'm sure there's a way that Notre Dame could have acquiesced and bent over backwards to meet their demands, but at some point you can't do that. This is a historic rivalry; it's been at the same point in the calendar all along. I don't think Notre Dame really wanted to change anything, but USC did, and I don't necessarily blame Notre Dame for not letting them just dictate the terms of that rivalry. I think Notre Dame, you know, had to make a stand, and I do sort of blame USC for all this.
Yes, I think that I agree. Everyone sucks here, but I think that USC sucks a little bit more because they're simply scared to play Notre Dame later in the season because of the college football playoff. And again, like I said earlier with the Scott Drew Najee situation, I just can't, it's so different than when it was growing up. Like, teams are running from other teams because they do not want to take a loss to miss the college football playoff. And what I would say to USC is, like, let's establish yourself as a program again before you start talking about college football playoffs. So just play the game,
Yeah, I agree. And you see they're losing their defense coordinator too.
Let's focus on that.
USC's got all this momentum or whatever, and I don't see it, man. That seems like an interesting talking point, but I couldn't agree less. I don't think USC has a ton of momentum.
Right. No, totally agree. David, thank you so much, my friend. Get better. I will talk to you on Wednesday.
Our brother, sounds good.
That was CBS Sports' David Cobb, college basketball, college football writer for them. Does tremendous work. Also does tremendous work on this radio station every single Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with Gabe. And then, of course, Jeffrey and Company. He is one of the company. Does amazing work. Go check him out. You can find him on Twitter, David W. Cobb. When we come back, we got to take a trip around the NFL. Stick around and listen to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Welcome back into the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. At this time, every single day on this show, we take a trip around the NFL, and we're going to do it again right now. You blew it. You absolutely blew it, Pittsburgh Steelers. You were playing an injury-riddled, terrible, terrible Cleveland Browns team. Now, you were on the road, but all you had to do was win this game. And what did you do? You lost 13-6 to the Cleveland Browns. Now, you're missing DK Metcalf for this game. It seemed to have a huge impact on their offense. Aaron Rodgers just simply did not have anybody to throw it to except for his tight end, Pat Freiermuth, and he tried to throw it to him a lot. He had five targets on him. Scotty Miller was his second most targeted player. Not the best of days for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but I just cannot believe they lost this football game and seemingly had everything tied up. Their tumultuous season, you were going to have again another Mike Tomlin playoff team, and now all of that is in question because you couldn't beat the Cleveland Browns. What a terrible, terrible loss by them.
It was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Damn near speechless. Just disgusting. Disgusting work.
It is one of the most deflating losses I have seen in a very, very long time. And then that leads to a matchup against the next team. Derrick Henry. King Henry.
Full stop.
That's
all we need.
Historic night. One of the biggest I'm putting my team on my back performances I have ever seen. Keeps the Baltimore Ravens alive. And when the season began, Gabe and I took a look at the schedule. And we said, that Week 18 game, Steelers and Ravens, may be for all the marbles. And guess where we are? It is for all the marbles. But Derrick Henry, four touchdowns, tied his career high. 36 carries, a career high. 216 yards. Top 10 all-time in rushing yards now. Seventh career 200-yard game. Most in NFL history. Being able to watch Derrick Henry has been an absolute privilege. And I think that it's going to be a shame that he is probably going to end his career without a Super Bowl ring. But when you talk about all-time running backs in the NFL, I think that Derrick Henry has entered the conversation. Is he the best ever? No, I don't think he's the best ever. But he is absolutely in the conversation. And the performance that he put on in Green Bay was old-school Derrick Henry. And in a season in which people were questioning whether or not he was washed, just go look at his stats. He's been amazing this year. He is the only reason the Baltimore Ravens are still alive. Just kudos to King Henry. God, it was just so much fun to see him turn back the clock for a game. The San Francisco 49ers had a gritty, gritty win in what was maybe the best game of the NFL season. And I thought that it was so cool to see when they won that game, the entire team in the end zone just dropped to their knees because they were up against it. They were missing a ton of players, and they just gritted out one of the best wins of the entire season. I thought it was unbelievably impressive from the 49ers, and every week that goes by, I feel like their chances of making it to the Super Bowl and being a real contender continues to grow. I mean, they beat the Bears 42-38. Just, it was one of those all-time games. Brock Purdy really showed up. A lot of people were questioning earlier in the season whether Mac Jones should have been the answer at quarterback for the 49ers, and I think that Brock Purdy reminded people that he got paid that amount of money for a reason. And then Christian McCaffrey just continues to put together an incredible year. McCaffrey has now joined Hall of Famer LaDainian Tomlinson as the only players in NFL history to have three seasons with at least 2,000 scrimmage yards and 15 touchdowns. I truly thought it was one of the grittiest wins of the entire year. And I don't know, in a day and age where it feels like regular season games in all sports don't matter as much as they used to, seeing how much that win meant to the 49ers, it meant something to me.
And that was a great game last night. That game was just awesome.
The Jacksonville Jaguars. George, I wanted to bring this conversation to you because I think that it's an interesting one. And I think it's one that we didn't necessarily expect to have. But Jaguars head coach Liam Cohen is now the only first-year head coach in NFL history to win 12-plus games after taking over a team that had four or fewer wins in the prior season. Does Liam Cohen have a shot at NFL Coach of the Year?
He should have a pretty damn good shot. I mean, of all years, though, even with that sort of turnaround, this is one of those years where you're like, ooh, I don't know if he gets it.
I don't know if he gets it. Because, like you said, it is, in most years, I think that this would be damn near a lock
right
to win Coach of the Year. But then you look at the Bears and Ben Johnson. You look at the 49ers with Shanahan. It's like, how are they still able to do this? You've got Mike Vrabel turning the Patriots around in a single year. It's an interesting conversation, but, man, when Cohen stepped up to that microphone and said, Duval, and all of us were like, oh, no, this seems like it could go poorly. I don't know if I've ever seen someone lose a presser in the way he has and then gone on to have such.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake, delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Such a successful year, and this cannot go without being said. Trevor Lawrence, been really good down the stretch. Really good down the stretch.
These last handful of games, T-Law is looking...
He's looking like the quarterback that was promised.
Right. I mean, he's not turning the ball over, moving the ball downfield. The biggest thing for me, he's using his legs more.
Mm-hmm.
He's always been a really good runner. We just haven't...
Seen it. Yeah.
And now so, Cohen's like...
Jaguars, one of the best stories in the NFL. Truly one of the best stories. That's... Welcome back into the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. I'm going to close the show by doing a Christmas recap with King George. It's the question that I asked David Cobb. It's my favorite question to ask people around the holidays. So I'm going to ask it to George now. George, what was your favorite gift to receive and your favorite gift to give for Christmas and or the holidays?
The easiest one here is the best gift that I gave. This was a group gift, obviously, with my sisters, and it was also technically a combo gift for my dad's birthday and for Christmas. So on his list, he just put down a little gift card to Academy, and we're like, that's interesting. I know exactly what he wants from Academy Sports. We bought him a brand new smoker.
Nice.
And by a smoker, I mean... a full-on competition-style pellet grill.
Excellent.
We didn't tell him about it. It was all while he was at work. I went and picked it up from Academy and hit it.
How did you fit that into your car?
I did not drive my car.
Okay,
I went and used. I went and grabbed my mom's car, took everything out of the back, went and got this gigantic thing, and then hit it where my mom works. So he had no idea about it.
That's excellent.
Well, it was done. Fantastic.
Well done, George. What was your favorite gift that you got?
I'm going to go with what my sisters gave me. They spoiled me this year. They got me a bunch of new clothes. I'm very excited to start busting out my new Jets hoodie.
Oh. No paper bag?
No.
No, just the hoodie.
Just the hoodie.
No paper bag included.
No paper bag.
They would include it by now.
No paper bag needed.
No. I don't know about that.
All pride, baby.
I don't know about that. My favorite gift that I was able to give this holiday season is I found a Back to the Future vinyl.
Ooh.
That I gave my little brother. It's one of his favorite movies of all time. So I was really happy I was able to find that and gift it. And then I received some vintage books from Meemaw. I thought that was really cool. So shout out to
Meemaw. Nice.
I know that you're listening right now. She's our best fan. Our best fan. But that's going to be it for the Gabe Kuhn Show today. This has been Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe. I've been joined, as always, by King George, George Ruggiero. We will be back here tomorrow, same time, same place. I want to thank David Cobb for being on the show today. Tomorrow we will have Jeff Calkins on at 5 o'clock. But thank you so much for listening. Get home safely. Stay safe. Talk to you tomorrow.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.